It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
301 here on The Fan in New York City, Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. Hopefully everybody had a very pleasant Lug evening. Got you for another 2 hours here on The Fan. The warm-up show with Al and CeeLo comes your way at that time. We have reached the All-Star break. The Home Run Derby is later tonight. The All-Star game is Tuesday. And when it comes to the Derby, when it comes to the baseball All-Star game, for my money, they have always been and still are the best of all the four major sports when it comes to All-Star game and the festivities that surround it. The dunk contest isn't what it used to be. Three-point contest is pretty solid. But the NBA All-Star game, they've tried a million different iterations and rule changes and format changes, trying to find the right recipe. Football, we know they got rid of the Pro Bowl. Now I think they either draw straws or they have a water balloon fight or tug of war or whatever exactly they do. War. They do all kinds of different things to see which has the better conference, AFC or NFC. But the Pro Bowl was trash. It was horrible. They needed to get rid of that. Hockey's decent. But baseball, to me, the Derby's awesome. And then the All-Star game, because the baseball All-Star game mimics and looks exactly like a regular season baseball game. It's not like the baseball All-Star game is 10-9 or 15-10, and there's no pitching, and everybody's just laissez-faire going, you know, around the bases, and it just kind of feels more like an exhibition or a joke. Like, that game is played seriously, the baseball All-Star game. Now, I didn't like the farce and the nonsense of whoever wins the All-Star game gets home field advantage in the World Series. That was just stupid and idiotic and sort of a prisoner of a moment. Thankfully, they got rid of that. But last year, we got to see the swing off. That was cool. Which I think is still going. I still think is a thing in the All-Star game. I got to freshen up on my All-Star rules here. I mean, I'm not Evan. By the way, my sources tell me that Evan Roberts is on vacation, which I already knew that part. But my sources tell me that Evan is watching Summer League basketball on vacation with his kids and his wife and his, by the way, I think this is a vacation not only with them, but with his other, with his sister and stuff, I think goes on. So his entire family's basically there. Can you disconnect for 5 minutes? It's Summer League basketball. I guess. I don't know. For me, that would be probably where I would draw the line when I'm on vacation as far as watching sports. Like, if I happen to be on vacation, and some of you will be next year, this is why they call me Tommy the Lover Boy. Super Bowl's on Valentine's Day next year. So I'm sure the missus, or if you got a new girlfriend especially, might have something planned for you where you guys will be away for the Super Bowl. In that case, yeah, you're watching the Super Bowl. But if I'm down by the beach or wherever I am, I'm not turning on the Summer League. I just happened to flip through it the other night because I was on my couch. If I was anywhere else on the planet Earth, I wouldn't have watched it. But that's what my sources tell me, that Evan's watching. And that adds up. That checks out. He's probably listening right now because he can't sleep. You know what would probably put you to sleep? The Summer League. Even in a slow week without a lot of sports. Now, you do get the World Cup this week, and the Final Four is amazing. It's the top four teams in FIFA. You have France, you have Spain, you have Argentina, you have England. So it is a great Final Four, even if you're not a big soccer fan or you're not a World Cup soccer fan, if you're just a sports fan, and they're on 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So for most people, you know, you're around the office, you pop it on, or if you're like me, who just gets up right around that time, that's perfect. And then the final is here at MetLife on Sunday. So you get a little bit more sports than you normally would during the All-Star break. Mets start on Thursday. But Summer League basketball. I know I was flipping around the other night and I caught it, but the only reason I stayed on it for 2 seconds was to laugh because the Knicks were playing the Spurs. And I thought, these two teams just met in the finals a couple of weeks ago, and now their summer league representatives, or whatever you want to call them, the young players on their teams, are playing in what is basically a scrimmage. What would you even call it? By the way, I'm slightly choking on a loogie there. That's why my voice just broke, because it would be quite ironic that a host that calls himself Loogie would choke on a loogie during his show. So I just took a sip of water there. We should be good. I could do play-by-play as well. I could do analyst. I could do play-by-play. I could do either one, really. That's where we're at. But I could kind of feel it in my throat. And it was one of those things where it was just as I was about to sign on the air. And once in a while, when I hit a loogie, the actual loogies in my throat kind of creep their way to the top of my throat, which is not very advantageous when you're talking on the radio. That could be problematic. But that's sort of the risk you run when you call yourself Loogie. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. And by the way, I'll be on the air tomorrow night, right around 9 o'clock. We're airing a special Odyssey baseball show between 7 and 9. So I'll be on during the Derby. I'll be on during the All-Star game. I'll be on 7 to mid the other two nights. So a lot of hours of Lugauer this week. We'll do Ask Tommy Anything. We'll do Settle the Debate. A couple other fun surprises. So a jam-packed week. Plus, with baseball on a hiatus, we will be mixing more football in as we go on the show here. Let's head out to Somerset. It's Aaron on the Fan. What's up, Aaron? Yeah. Well.
Tom, can you hear me?
Well, I can hear you now. Yeah. I mean, I heard you the entire time. I just think our audience was missing this wonderful conversation that we were having. I heard it. That's why I was agreeing with most things you were saying.
Yeah, for sure.
The audience.
I kind of migrated over to the Fan over the course of the last year. And I, you know, it's big part of you, big part because of you. I called you one night. It was after the Sixers series, and I kind of like was talking to you about how I was letting my delusions run away with me, with the Knicks being good enough to win a championship. And you told me, like, why are you delusional? Like, the Knicks are a good team.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that when you see how great a team is playing, you honestly have to believe them. And
yeah, you got to ride the wave. You have to not allow your PTSD or sort of your negative vibes as a sports fan to take over. And you have to see what you're watching. And what we were watching there with that Knick team was a team of destiny, dominance. And you had to ride the wave. Now, not everybody got on that wave with me. Thankfully, you did, Aaron. But I rode that wave all the way to a championship and a parade.
And you know what else it was, Tommy? It was also how they failed upwards for a consistent 5-year span.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, in that second year, they missed the playoffs.
Yep.
But, you know, they consistently made it further and further. Obviously, we had those 2 years where we lost to the Pacers.
Well, once they really built up the team. I mean, obviously, the year that they didn't make the playoffs, you know, they didn't have the guys that they have now, but they were building it, you know, slowly, brick by brick. Leon Rose is the architect. And once they had that team, yeah, you're right, a couple of playoff disappointments. But I think forged through those disappointments, they created this bond and this chemistry that ultimately led to this historic and unbelievable run that they had this past year.
Yep, absolutely. And I got one Giants thing for you.
Yeah,
I'm comparing right now in my mind the way that the Knicks have progressed over the few years to what I want for John Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. The Knicks have gotten to this point because of what Tom Thibodeau was able to do for this team, and obviously, you know, everything that happened with Tom Thibodeau and Mike Brown, notwithstanding. But I want the singular game to be held to the highest respect. I want the Giants to go out there and prioritize winning week one, winning in week two. That's the things that I want for this team. And I believe now that we have the front seven that we have now, I think that transition kind of quickly. I think that Dexter Lawrence wanting out might've been the best thing for us. Obviously, you know, a lot of Giants fans wanted Caleb Downs, but we got Mauer Noah with that 10th pick.
Yeah, I was one of them. I was one of them that wanted Downs, but I understand, especially when you have a young quarterback, he is your, you know, your biggest commodity. You want to protect him with the guys up front. So I'm never going to argue against drafting an offensive lineman in the top 10. It's a lunch pail, hard hat, championship winning move. So as much as I love Downs and I hated the fact that he went to the Cowboys, I can't argue with what the Giants did there. Yeah, it made it worse, but I can't argue with what the Giants did there.
And you know what the other thing is? Like, the previous guy was talking about, you know, how he didn't really like Jackson Dart's running style. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it. I really do like his versatility. I just want him to be a little bit smarter. And I don't know if he has the wherewithal to do that on his own. So protection is a very, very important thing.
Well, that, and I also think in his rookie year, he there was a lot put on his plate and on his shoulders as sort of being the savior. The franchise was in the toilet. He was
a
shining light. He became a celebrity overnight. Obviously, a good-looking guy. Doesn't have a problem getting a date on a Saturday night. I know he has a girlfriend now, but when he started, he didn't. So he is a good-looking dude, you know, the quarterback in New York. So I think he put a lot on his shoulders to just make these exciting, great plays. And I think it led to some of the unnecessary hits that he took. I think in year two with Harbaugh now, you know, that CEO adult in the room, he'll be a lot smarter, Dart, when he runs.
And one last thing before I land my plane. I think that, you know, the Odell signing, obviously it's a lot of nostalgia for Giants fans, but I think Odell was the last player for us who really achieved that celebrity New York Giants status for us. And it kind of happened really, really fast. And, you know, the bulk of the burden when things went wrong went to Odell in a lot of those situations. And I do think that having Odell in that locker room, he's older now. He's been through a lot. I do think that in a perfect world, I think that Odell can kind of impart some of that wisdom to Jackson Dart with that kind of celebrity lifestyle.
Yeah.
And kind of like, don't take it too fast, youngin. Like, you know, let's take it easy.
Yeah. And they developed a friendship already. So they already, they have a little bit of a bromance going, the two of them. And I think you're right. I think Odell can be that. Look, he's getting a second chance.
I'm going to hang up and listen.
No, you got it, Aaron. And that's why I was all for the Odell signing. I know not every Giant fan, my fellow Giant fans, agree with me about this, but to me, it's so low risk. And I understand some of the trepidations about Odell Beckham Jr., but the Odell Beckham Jr. we saw with the Giants as far as the negative stuff, I don't think that exists anymore. It's a guy who won a Super Bowl, was a big part of that run for the Rams. He might have even won the MVP in the Super Bowl if he didn't injure his knee and was knocked out of the game in the first half. He's not the player he once was, but it's a very interesting wide receiver room, especially when you consider Malik Nabers might not be back till the midway point of the season. And the Giants made a lot of moves at receiver in the offseason. Darnell Mooney, Calvin Austin, Isaiah Likely, who's a tight end, but he profiles more as a, I think his skill set is more of a, as a wide receiver and will be used that way in the slot.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
You also added Juju Smith-Schuster, you added Braxton Berrios, you added Odell, of course. But to me, I like the full circle appeal here of Beckham coming back. The relationship he has with Dart, as they are acquaintances, maybe even friends. Obviously, Odell played with the Ravens when Harbaugh was the coach there. The history that Beckham has with this city, with this fan base, with this franchise. To me, it's a no-brainer. And if Odell acts up, there's the door. It's simple. It's not like he's so great anymore that you have to put up with it. If he's a malcontent, he's gone in a second because he's nowhere near the talent he used to be. So anybody that's worried about him acting that way, he'll be gone in 3 minutes if there's any kind of problems. And if he shows that he can't even remotely contribute, then he won't make the team. But I just thinking having Odell at training camp is going to be awesome. Seeing him in the preseason is going to be awesome. And I hope the best. I hope that he can go out with the uniform that he had on that he started with the Giants. I think that'd be cool. That's why I was championing for it. And he's a polarizing big star. Good topic here on the radio station. Especially if he can make the team. And if he has a little bit left in the tank. I think that adds to the storylines for the Giants this year. So I was all for it. I'm glad that they got the deal done. And I think it speaks to a bunch of stuff, especially when you consider that Smith-Schuster and Berrios were also signed. Now, Berrios is more special teams because there's injuries there. But the fact that the Giants keep adding these wide receivers and kind of stockpiled it tells you that they're probably worried about Nabers. Not only his return date, but also his return to greatness, which I thought he would be in this league. I'll hold out optimism. I always do. I'll hold out positivity. I always do. But the Giants are definitely stockpiling these wide receivers with the, I think, intention of Malik missing some time. Coming up later this hour, I will give you my do's and don'ts for the Yankees with the trade deadline coming up August 3rd. Players I think they should go after, players I think they should stay away from. Now, the beauty of this radio station is whenever I have a brain fart, which isn't often, but on the overnight, sometimes I get a little bots, I get a little stonot, and I can go on these tangents and these rants where I'm all over the place and nobody can really reel me in except for myself. And I get on a roll and I have a destination, but perhaps we take a couple of detours, but I know in the back of my mind where I want to go. And I know the payoff will be there. So if we have to go through the winding roads, all good. Earlier on in the show, probably the first hour, I was on one of those tangents and one of those rants. And it started with a caller calling me up about, I didn't even realize this was about Cam Schlitter, but apparently he's a cat guy. Who knows? And he kind of put me in the same category as Cam as a cat guy. And I kind of said, hey, listen, I'm not really a cat guy. I mean, I love my cat. He's my special boy. But my wife wanted the cat. So I'm a cat guy through marriage. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have one. I would have not purchased a cat. I'm glad we did. But I would have not, if I was a bachelor or with some other woman that maybe wasn't a cat person, I wouldn't have gotten a cat. So my wife is more the cat person and I'm a cat person through marriage. Anywho, it got me thinking about all the, believe it or not, this is where my brain went, to all the actresses that have played Catwoman, including Anne Hathaway, Halle Berry, Michelle Pfeiffer, Zoe Kravitz, even Julie Newmar. I'm old school. And then because of that, I brought up the Batman movie, which I watched, and it was like the new one. They're coming out with a new one, but the Robert Pattinson Batmans. And I watched the entire movie. And then the credits start to roll, and it said, the Penguin, Colin Farrell. I said, what? Colin Farrell wasn't in this movie. There was some fat guy that played the Penguin and had a great New York accent. It's like, nope. And then I did some research. I'm like, oh, wow, that's Colin Farrell. And then, of course, the show came out, the Penguin series on HBO, and it was incredible. And then it got me on a Colin Farrell rant, which... And I'm saying it, I think I'm saying his name wrong too. Farrell, Colin Farrell. Because it's Will Farrell, Colin Farrell. Either way, tomato, tomato. But I wasn't a big fan of his when he first started in the acting sphere. When he first burst onto the scene. I didn't think he was very good. In fact, I've been to movies, this is where I was going and I forgot. This is the part of the story where my mind went to mush and I just totally forgot what I was talking about. When we last left our heroes, this is where we're at. I've been to the movies a million times. I don't go as much as I used to because my wife hates going to the movies. She hates movies. She, in all likelihood, hates me. So the combination definitely not going to work. So I rarely go to the movies anymore. But throughout my life, I was a big movie goer. Loved going to the movies. Big movie fan. And I still am a big movie fan, big movie buff, but I don't go to the movies anymore. But I've been a million times. The only movie I ever walked out of, because I'm very much a, I guess this is the positive Tommy in me, even if a movie stinks, and the majority of movies I've seen in my life, I've either liked, loved, or at the very least tolerated. But one movie I saw that was absolutely the worst. The worst. And even the movies that I thought were, I never walked out. Got through it. I love The Irishman, but people walked out of that movie. I mean, it lasted 6.5 days, the movie, so I understand that. Castaway, I went to go see that. People walked out. Again, it's a man, it's a volleyball. If that type of stuff doesn't excite you, where you need just constant, where you need it to be Avatar and a Marvel movie every 35 seconds, you could be bored by that. Castaway. I wasn't. I thought it was great. But I have a very eclectic palate when it comes to movies. Anywho, the only movie I've ever walked out of was Alexander. Awful. And this has Angelina Jolie in it. Like I brought up earlier, I could just watch a movie with Scarlett Johansson standing there for 4 straight hours. Sign me up. Make it 8 hours. But this movie, Alexander, and if you haven't seen it, it's Colin Farrell, Angelina Jolie. Jeez, there's a bunch of other people in it. Anthony Hopkins is in there. It's like a good cast, but it was awful. And it was like 3 hours long. And I stuck with it for like two and a half hours. And finally, I was like, I got to get out of here. This movie is that bad. But it's the only movie I ever walked out of. Because it was slow, boring, just... So I had a bad taste. I didn't like him to begin with as far as an actor, Colin Farrell. But then I saw that movie and I was like, oh, this is so bad. This is so bad. And there was probably a little bit of me being like, hey, I want to date all these women he's dating. Why can't I date them? I should have been an actor. Like I said, I got into radio. What an idiot I am. Not that I have an Irish accent or I'm as handsome as Colin Farrell, but I still think if you're an actor, you know, please. Write your ticket. But that made me kind of like I didn't think he was a good actor basically from then till now. And then I see him in The Penguin, and he's done a lot of good stuff since. But when I saw The Penguin, I was like, this is incredible. Not only the transformation, but obviously the acting that he did in that. So that was the long way to go, about 3 hours to get to the end of that story. Now, speaking of actors' movies, I do unfortunately have some sad news to pass along. Sam Neill, who famously was in Jurassic Park, Dr. Alan Grant, has passed away at 78. Jurassic Park is one of those movies, and I know I speak for a lot of people in my generation. You know, I'm 40. Jurassic Park, I put it right there with like Home Alone. Just whenever I see Jurassic Park, or I see Home Alone, or I see a trail, any kind of clip, it just, there's such a nostalgic feeling I have for it. Because both of those movies kind of came out during really the formative years. And I feel like Jurassic Park was always on around Thanksgiving, which is my favorite holiday. So I always get a warm, fuzzy feeling about that movie. And obviously Sam was tremendous in it. He didn't do Lost World, but he came back for the third movie in the original Jurassic Parks, which obviously they did the newer ones with Chris Pratt, and then they just did one with Scarlett Johansson, but the original three. That first one, which is obviously on so many levels, the story, the music, the CGI, you know, the special effects. And you know I love to quote movies, so hopefully Al's not in the car because I know he doesn't like when I quote the movies. He's working with CeeLo today, so CeeLo will be quoting all the Will Ferrell movies. I like quoting movies. Craig hated when I did it too. What do you want me to tell you? It's just my brain does that. I can't really shut my... It's not like I do it on purpose. This one I'm going to do on purpose, but when I do it on the radio, it's just because my brain does it. But one of my favorite lines and scenes in a movie... Now, it's not Sam Neill delivering the line, but he's obviously in the scene. It's just such... Like, you get goosebumps when you watch it, because it's so good. And Jurassic Park is just incredible. And I'm a huge Jeff Goldblum fan, by the way. But the line of, Dr. Grant, my dear Dr. Sadler, welcome to Jurassic Park. I don't have a career in acting, but what a line that was. Oh, that's so good. And then the song, the music, which is iconic for that movie. But Sam Neill, who has unfortunately, sadly, passed away at the age of 78, news broke a little while ago, was a huge part of that movie. Obviously, the star of it. But Jurassic Park was just so ahead of its time. And Spielberg was just on a roll. He was on a major heater back then. I mean, we all know Jaws, which I still can't. You could not pay me enough money to watch that. It's a great movie, Jaws. I can't watch that movie. I can't even take a shower after I watch that movie. Literally, I can't take a shower. I was just talking about this with my cousin. He goes, you realize it's not a documentary. I'm like, yeah, you do realize there are sharks and they eat humans. You're aware of that, right? They may not know they're eating a human and they may not swallow me, but they will bite me. I will bleed to death. So yes, it's real as far as I'm concerned. But Spielberg was on E.T., obviously. Indiana Jones is Spielberg? I believe it is. I'll check with CeeLo in the break, but I'm pretty sure that is. But Jurassic Park is just such an iconic movie. And I had just recently watched the original, of course, Jurassic Park and Lost World, which was the second one, which Sam Neill, and if you're just tuning in, unfortunately, sadly, actor Sam Neill, Jurassic Park movies, has passed away, 78. He was not in the Lost World, but he was in the third one, which I don't think had a fancy title to it. I think it was just Jurassic Park 3. But the first one is an all-timer. Now, it's not in the Lugauer top 10, so to speak, but I think if you're ranking movies, especially box office, the impact it had, just being cutting edge, ahead of its time, Jurassic Park is right up there. And like I said, I'm pretty sure, much like Home Alone, because my favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. Now, as I'm an adult, I love Thanksgiving for other reasons, but one of the reasons why I love Thanksgiving, one of the reasons that I'm annoyed by the way people treat Thanksgiving is the reason I loved Thanksgiving when I was a kid, because it kind of kicks off the Christmas season. But always around Thanksgiving, I feel like they would air Jurassic, they being cable people, they would air Jurassic Park and Home Alone. So I always have this nostalgia when I see that movie or any clip from it, because it reminds me of Thanksgiving. It reminds me of the Christmas season, which obviously when you're a younger kid is amazing. Christmas now as an adult, I don't have kids, thankfully, but when you're an adult with kids, the magic's there. Really? Okay. Yeah, okay. Ask Crystal Presley in an hour and a half how much magic he has at the household with Christmas, and then he'll tell you. If you got 4 hours, he'll let you know how that goes. But when you're a kid, it's amazing. Thanksgiving, though, to me, stands the test of time. But yes, unfortunately, Sam Neill, actor, Jurassic Park, Dr. Alan Grant, has passed away at the age of 78. That news broke a little while ago. And even though I just watched it, I'm definitely going to fire up Jurassic Park at some point here over the summer, because it is a all-time iconic, revolutionary movie. One of the great, I think, achievements in the history of cinema. That's how important it is. That's how, it's just a legendary movie. Like, it holds up, the CGI holds up, the animatronics, I think it's called, which is obviously the T-Rex when he's, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't know what to tell you at this. Well, I mean, I don't think I'm spoiling it, but the dinosaurs attack the people. Shocking. They don't, I know this might come as a surprise, but they don't go to Jurassic Park, drive around in a car, see the dinosaurs, and go home. That would be kind of boring. That'd be kind of boring. The dinosaurs obviously act like, dinosaurs. And they want to eat the humans. I know that comes as a surprise to many of you that haven't seen the movie. But.
And you catch Samuel L. Jackson right before Pulp Fiction.
That's right. That is right. Another great movie. I made a major mistake. I watched I've seen Pulp Fiction a million times. And I do this with Goodfellas all the time. And I never seem to mind. But I did with Pulp Fiction. I watched Pulp Fiction on basic cable. You can't do that. You just can't do it. Can't do it. But now I'm all over the place, but the Pulp Fiction scene, my favorite scene, well, I got a lot of favorite scenes in that movie. Jeez. The Travolta Uma Thurman one, though, that whole scene is so good. The entire movie's amazing, but Travolta and Uma Thurman was just cinema. Great stuff. Now, I had just found out recently that Travolta turned down a major role to do Pulp Fiction, which obviously turned his career around. But the movie he would have done was like, I got to look this up. It was like this crazy, like it would have been just as huge as Pulp Fiction. Travolta turned down. Forrest Gump. I think that's what it was. Yeah. John Travolta turned down Forrest Gump so he could be Vincent Vega, obviously, in Pulp Fiction. Boy. Now, I'm going off the assumption that he would have been as good as Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump. I'm going with that assumption. Would Tom Hanks have then been Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction? I care about that stuff more sometimes than I am so fascinated by the who turned down this role, who didn't turn down that role, who got this role. That stuff is crazy. But it's hard to argue because Travolta's career completely you know, he had the Saturday Night Fever, he had Grease, and then his he kind of cooled off, and then Pulp Fiction, first of all, was a different type of role for him. Second of all, the movie was highly successful. Even if it wasn't highly successful box office, which I'd have to double check if that was the case, obviously, the movie is amazing, so we love the movie as, and it's one of those ones that, much like Jurassic Park, that people still talk about, people still watch. And Will Ferrell is in it, Al. So there you go. So he's not in every movie, but. Is the phone number to call here on After Hours. Let's go to Matt in Albany. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I'm very sorry to hear about Sam Neill.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about another one of his films that I love, which was The Hunt for Red October.
Amazing. Such a great movie. So, so good. That was really in that era of movies where it was just, it's hard to even put into words, but they were just intense. There was great drama. So that's another one I highly recommend.
You're on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, that's the perfect
and the other thing that
Sean Connery,
amazing.
It was like the prime of Sean Connery.
Well, that was the other thing. The other thing, too, is what's amazing is you would think he would have been completely overshadowed by Sean Connery, who was great.
Yes.
But he really was able to hold his own.
Agree.
It was a terrific film. And I got another one for you, just mentioning roles that people turned down.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's one for you. Charles Grodin had been cast to play The Graduate.
Which obviously Dustin Hoffman...
And he held out. He wanted more money than they were offering, and they wouldn't meet his price. So that's how we got Dustin Hoffman as The Graduate.
Which is obviously a great movie. Great story about The Graduate. And I sort of told the story before on the air, but so obviously Mrs. Robinson, played by the late, great Anne Bancroft. Anne Bancroft, I guess, was my grandma's cousin. Anne Bancroft was at, obviously she married Mel Brooks, tremendously funny. Anne Bancroft in a ton of things, but most known, I think, for The Graduate. Fatso, you ain't the only. She was my grandma's cousin. She was actually at my grandparents' wedding. And back then, she went, because I'm pretty sure Anne Bancroft was not her, that was just a stage name. Yeah. Anna Maria Luisa Italiano was her actual name. So Anne Bancroft was just a stage name. But yes, she was, I don't know about first cousins, maybe they were, but she was definitely at my grandparents' wedding. And she, of course, was in The Graduate, Mrs. Robinson, Dustin Hoffman. But yeah, the roles that people turned down. But you always wonder what would have been the movie with those people in it. But yes, Sam Neill, unfortunately, sadly, has passed away. Jurassic Park, of course, The Hunt for Red October. A lot of legendary movies he was a part of. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night. If you're on hold, we'll get to you. Coming up, my do's and don'ts for the Yankees at the trade deadline. There are some players that I've targeted that they should go out and trade for, and some players, if I was Brian Cashman and the Yankees, that I would stay very, very far away from. And if you do have some memories, of course, about Sam Neill, or some movies that maybe I'm not thinking about, you could certainly hit me up as well. As you know, I'm a huge movie guy. 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
340 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019. We got another hour and 20 minutes to go before Al and CeeLo come your way on the warm-up show. And that'll be followed by, I believe I got this right. If I don't, you know what? Just forget I even said it. But I believe Jerry Recco and John Franco will be filling in for Boomer and Geo on the Boomer and Geo program this morning. We'll get to your calls in just 1 second. But first, This Fan Focus is presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. The trade deadline is August 3rd. There have been a lot of names that have been thrown out there for the Yankees as far as trade targets. I think we can all agree on the needs of the Yankees. They certainly need a power-hitting right-handed bat at catcher. I think they certainly need another infielder. In theory, one that plays third base. I think they need bullpen arms. Several of them. Much like last year when they traded for three bullpen arms. Duvall, Bird, Bednar. And at least one of them worked out. Bednar, but he's worked out in a big-time way as he's the team's closer. So we know the needs. And there's always going to be those shiny toys. Like your wife sends you out to buy groceries. And she says, listen, kids are going back to school. We got to get them bananas for school and milk and oatmeal and so whatever. You get the idea. I don't have kids. You could tell by my list there. But she sends you with specific things to buy. And she says, all right, go out and get that stuff for us. Yeah, no problem. And then you get to the grocery store and you see cookies. You see cake. You see, hopefully Al Deuce is not listening right now. You see Entenmann's, which they have a display at the end of the aisle. And you end up buying all this dessert. Instead of buying all the healthy food for your kids to go back to school, you bought a bunch of Dunkaroos. Which are very delicious, by the way. And I would be extremely happy if not only my parents brought that back for me, or if my wife can bring that back for me at this point, I'd be extremely excited about that. So you have the shiny toys, the cookies and candy and cupcakes. So here are the do's and don'ts, because I put together a list. I put together a list for the Yankees and Brian Cashman and what I think they should do. So do, don't, do, don't. Okay. So the first do is Hunter Goodman. Right-handed, power bat, catcher, one of the best offensive catchers in all of baseball. He has 27 home runs this year. 27 home runs. Austin Wells doesn't have 27 home runs and RBIs combined. Goodman had 31 home runs last year. He's on pace for 40 this year. I think he can get there if he stays healthy in the second half. He's a terrific, talented player. If the Rockies make Hunter Goodman available, if I'm the Yankees, I pounce. That to me would be top priority, Hunter Goodman. That's a do. A don't, Tarik Skubal. Skubal, as great as he is, and he's obviously great, on any given day, he's the best pitcher in baseball. But the Yankees have so many great starting pitchers. They have Schlittler. They're getting Fried back in a couple of weeks. They have Gerrit Cole. They're extremely strong in their rotation. As awesome as it would be to add Skubal to any rotation in baseball, and as excited as you would be as a fan base, hey, this huge splash, we're blocking him from the Dodgers, we're getting Skubal on the Yankees. It's a don't for me. If you can't get to the World Series or win a World Series with Schlittler, Fried, and Cole, then you know what? Pack it in. You don't need to add Skubal to that mix, not when there are other glaring needs on this baseball team. So Skubal's a don't. So far, a do, Hunter Goodman, a don't, Tarik Skubal. This is the trade deadline do's and don'ts for the Yankees. Here's another do, Luis Arraez. Arraez is one of those players that doesn't do a lot of things well, but he does two things extremely well, and it is two things that the Yankees don't do well. Luis Arraez is going to not strike out, and he's going to hit for a very high average, which makes him very appealing, especially for the Yankees, because they don't have a lot of high average guys, if any. Certainly not in the category of Arraez, and the Yankees strike out a ton. In fact, last I checked, they were in the top five as far as most strikeouts in all of baseball, offensively, which is not a place you want to be because no team has ever won the World Series when they've been in the top five in terms of strikeouts offensively. So that's a category that you want to correct. That's a stat that you want to be more on the positive side than the negative side. And obviously, Luis Arraez, if you put him at the top of the order, he hits for extremely high average. He doesn't strike out. He'll set the table for your Ben Rices, for your Stantons, for your Judges. for your Bellingers. So to me, Luis Arraez is a do. These are the trade deadline do's and don'ts for the Yankees. My list, Tommy Lugar's list. So a do so far, Hunter Goodman, Luis Arraez. A don't, Tarek Skubal. My second don't is Mike Trout. That is a big time don't. Hate the contract. Mike Trout at one time was the best player in baseball. He is no longer that player. Too injury prone. Skill set is not there day in and day out anymore. It is a horrible contract. You're almost done with, and look, Stanton has had his moments in October, but you're almost done with the Stanton contract, which has been an albatross for the Yankees. Why on earth would you want to add another one? Same type of deal, too. Mike Trout gets hurt a lot. He's not the same player he used to be. You're basically getting another Stanton. Now, Mike Trout in his prime was better than Stanton, although Stanton was a hell of a player in his prime. And Mike Trout has basically never been to October, so you don't know what type of postseason performer he's going to be. You know Stanton is unbelievable. And Mike Trout also goes in the same category as Skubal as far as shiny toy. He's the cupcake. He's the chocolate. He's the cookies that you go to the grocery store and buy instead of buying the healthy stuff that you need. You go and buy the stuff that tastes better. Skubal and Trout may taste better, but they're not what the Yankees need. So the do's so far on my Yankees do's and don'ts trade deadline list, Hunter Goodman, do. Tarek Skubal, don't. Luis Arraez, do. Mike Trout, don't. The final do is bullpen arms. Any type of bullpen arms you can get. Obviously, you want to get good ones, but the Yankees need reinforcements out in that bullpen badly. They need Bridges to Bednar. So do's are bullpen arms, and then the don't, it would be stay put. Now, I don't think this is happening, but it needs to be said. You can't fall in love with Austin Wells here if he gets a little hot. You got to stop with Anthony Volpe. You can't. I know you traded for him last year. You can't have Ryan McMahon be your starting third baseman in the postseason. You just can't. He's not that type of player anymore. He is more of a glove off the bench and a bat you put in as a pinch hitter that you're trying to pop a home run because McMahon does have some power. So staying put if you're the Yankees and saying, because you know the Yankees would say something like this, well, we're getting Max Fried back. That's a trade acquisition. We're getting Aaron Judge back. That's like a major trade. We're getting Stanton back. That's like a major trade. And yes, getting those three star players back, or at least Stanton a star at one point in his career, and in October he usually is a star. The other two, not debatable stars. Super, superstar Aaron Judge. But the acquisitions at the deadline married with those players, to me, is why the Yankees will go to the World Series. So, just to review the Tommy Lugauer Yankee trade deadline do's and don'ts for the Yankees. Do's, Hunter Goodman, Luis Arraez, bullpen arms. The don'ts, meaning don't trade for him, Tarek Skubal, Mike Trout, and, well, staying put. Having too much faith in the players that you continue to run out there, like Wells and Volpe, etc. Let's head out to Aiden in Point Pleasant here on The Fan. What's up, Aiden?
Hey, look, appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you, dude.
Hunter, two points, one Yankees and one quick Giants.
Mm-hmm.
With Hunter Goodman, I absolutely top of my wish list, and I agree with everything you've said so far. Do you think that the Rockies would make him available at the trade deadline, considering he's one of their best players, if not their best player?
I think if the offer was right, I would at least call them up, offer them something big, and see if they're willing to budge on him. I know he's a great player, obviously, but they are rebuilding. Maybe they still feel like they're a couple years away, and by the time they get good, Hunter Goodman will be a little bit older. So you know what? You stockpile some younger players. I understand where you're coming from, that Hunter Goodman might not be available, but I would definitely check in on him, and then I would, you know, up my ante and up the offer so that you give the Rockies an offer they can't refuse for him.
Absolutely. Would you offer... I'd assume you'd have to put Spencer Jones,
yes,
in that.
Yes, you have to.
Trade.
Yep.
Yeah. And one more thing about the Yankees and the quick Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Would you keep Austin Wells as a backup catcher?
Yes.
And use him sporadically?
I guess. I mean, look, the other day I said send him down, DFA him. if you want to keep him around for a lefty, you know, a platoon because you get a righty catcher and he's good defensively, fine. I just felt like get rid of him because he's just clearly, I think, done as a Yankee. But if they did, because of lack of options, keep him because of defense, then so be it. So I would probably move in that direction.
Yeah, and one thing to add to your Giants' point about Harbaugh and Jackson Dart running with it. I'm a true believer in, like, sophomore year, especially for young quarterbacks, kind of realizing that, you know, this isn't college anymore, and using your legs when you have a, you know, a finance major that isn't going to make it to the league versus a guy that does this for a full living. I think Jackson Dart's definitely going to have to learn the sliding. You see it with a lot of young quarterbacks. Well, the concussions worry me, and you say
concussions as far as more in the future, because he only had one concussion last year.
Right, like the sprinting, the diving forward versus sliding, trying to get the extra yard versus protecting yourself, even if that goes to a fourth and inches or a fourth and one or whatever.
And living to play not only another down, but also another game. He made two, whether he only had the one concussion, but he got way too comfortable in that blue medical tent. He's got to stay out of that blue medical tent. And I think with experience, also with John Harbaugh sort of instilling that in him, I would suggest that that would be the case this year, as he will be more, and I think less, you know, it was his rookie year. I think he was trying to make too much happen. I think that he'll be more grounded this year with Harbaugh.
Right, absolutely. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it. No problem. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Obviously, if you want to talk Mets, you want to talk Yankees, trade deadline, we've mixed in some football, and we unfortunately got the sad news that Sam Neill, actor, Jurassic Park, The Hunt for Red October, has passed away at 78. Let's go to Steve on the Fan. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Tommy.
Hey.
A couple of great Sam Neill movies. Did you already talk about Peaky Blinders?
No, I have not.
Have you seen that show?
I still got to see that. No, I've been meaning to watch the show. Thousands upon thousands of people have recommended it. And I started to watch the first episode. I've heard nothing but great things. I started to watch the first episode, and not because it was bad or anything, but I just couldn't get through it. Something was going on, and I haven't circled back to it, but I absolutely will.
Well, Sam Neill has one of his best roles in there as a detective, and the whole series is incredible. But Sam Neill is on the early part of the series, so when you first watch it, he's there.
Yep.
And also, he did a movie or a series early on when they did miniseries called Riley Ace of Spies.
Mm.
I don't know. That's something you should look into, too, because he was great in that, too. I mean, he was one of those actors who could do anything. And it's really sad that, and also, he was in something recently called The Untamed with Eric Bana. I think that was his last TV series.
Yes. It just started in 2025, Steve. And you know what? I'll give you a guilty pleasure for me, because it came out, Sam Neill movie, a guilty pleasure for me because it was right around that time period where I had just gotten cable. I think I've told the story before, but I didn't have cable when I was younger. I didn't get cable till I was probably, I don't know, 12, something like that. So I kind of, once I got cable, I wasn't really going to watch, because I was a teenager, or right on the cusp of being a teenager, I wasn't going to watch Nickelodeon. I didn't care about Nickelodeon anymore. When I was finally blessed with cable, I was turning on Howard Stern on E! At night. I was turning on Girls Gone Wild. I was turning on Celebrity Deathmatch. I was turning on MTV Spring Break. I was turning on Married with Children. I was turning on South Park. I was just, you know, I was obviously very much, the hormones and puberty were sinking in, and I wanted to watch that stuff on a nightly basis. But not only did we get cable, we also got HBO with the cable, which, you know, After Hours was very interesting at that point. But one of the movies at the time that was airing a ton, because it just came out in 97, and it was a guilty pleasure for me because it was one of those movies that if my mom probably knew I was watching it, she'd be like, why are you watching this? But Event Horizon, which is like kind of a sci-fi-y, Lawrence Fishburne's in it. I don't think it got like the greatest of reviews, but I'm a huge sucker for sci-fi movies. And that's one of those ones that's a guilty pleasure for me because I remember getting HBO at that time, and that this whole new world opened up to me. because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the movie was rated R, so I wouldn't have been able to go to the movies and see it at the time, obviously, because I wouldn't have been old enough. So that's one of those ones where you just pop it on HBO, and it was on all the time. But Event Horizon, late 90s for Sam Neill, and yes, obviously, of course, Jurassic Park, which is a legendary movie, just so good. Peaky Blinders, I have not seen. I'm annoyed by the fact that I haven't seen it. I've been recommended that show a billion times. A billion. And I started to watch the first episode, and like I said, something happened life-wise, and it just got me sidetracked, and but I have to circle back to it. And of course, Sam Neill was in that as well. 888, and if you're just tuning in, he unfortunately, sadly, has passed away at the age of 78. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugi here in the late night. Final hour to go. Whatever's on your mind here. Yankees, Mets, All-Star Week, Sam Neill's passing. We'll get in a little bit of the Conor McGregor stuff from Saturday as well. So another hour, plenty to go here, plenty of segments, plenty of time for your calls. If you're on hold right now, we'll get to you. If you want to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. It is After Hours. Tommy Lugauer, Lugi the Late Night here on The Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.